This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. You know the lyrics. To the shores of Tripoli goes the opening line of the Marine Corps hymn. It's a spot on the world's globe that has received plenty of attention over the past few weeks, and we're calling in our history doctor, Bill Smith, to help us understand Tripoli in history and now. Bill, welcome back.
Glad to be back.
What's the reference to the shores of Tripoli?
Well, it recalls the first ever foreign war for the United States, taking on the forces of the Ottoman Empire, loosely associated, in the first Barbary War from 1801 to 1805. Specifically, it's the Battle of Deme. This was the first time that the new United States of America saw its military forces lift the nation's colors in victory over foreign soil.
Really just about 30 years old.
Exactly.
This country. Barbary Coast. I've always heard of the Barbary Pirates.
Yes, of the same name.
Okay.
President Thomas Jefferson was dealing with raiders from the independent small sultanates of the north coast of Africa. Not terribly different from how our current president, Barack Obama, today has had to deal with similar pirates sailing out, looking for captives and tribute from the Horn of Africa into the Indian Ocean.
So who were the Barbary Pirates?
Well, the Barbary states included Algiers, Tunis, the Kingdom of Morocco, and, of course, Tripoli. This is the geographic forerunner of today's Libya. Jefferson had history with the Tripolitan rulers. He had chafed under original agreements of payment for safe passage that began roughly at the start of the nation. So you reference us being 30 years old. We've had this problem for some time. At that time, Jefferson had recommended the government not pay the tribute when he was just a negotiator. His fellow envoy and future American president, John Adams, agreed, but did not think it was practical for the fledgling nation to risk a war just after gaining its independence.
You stress that Jefferson suggested the United States not pay when he was a negotiator. This is before he becomes president. Jefferson.
Yes, well before he becomes President Jefferson. The war results from his decision as the president to send the fledgling United States Navy into the Mediterranean to protect American ships from the pirates. The Pasha of Tripoli had dramatically increased the tribute, and when Jefferson balked, war was declared by the Tripolitans on the United States.
Wow.
So, you know, this is a precedent-setting event, as Jefferson is the first to send American ships on patrol and does not notify Congress until they're too far out to sea to be recalled. So, you know, in one of these great, we're so upset at the president for doing things, that's just tradition. It's interesting to look back on this episode as we're trying to define it for the shores of Tripoli and find some small little details like that one in which opposition to the current president would be saying, well, War Powers Act. No, we're talking about the turn of the 1800s, not the turn of the 21st century in which we're having these issues.
So the president, President Jefferson, goes to Congress after the Navy has sailed away some and tells them, oh, I'm sending them on? They've left?
Well, what looks like a unilateral act in a 20 or 21st century president, is really more just the way things worked at the time. He's not trying to be that clever. But he did also calculate, some say, to get them out to sea far enough that they couldn't be signaled back. So that probably wasn't as far as today. You know, you can always find somebody in the world, but you didn't have to get too far offshore
right.
Back in the day.
Did Congress ever act?
Well, you know, after he informs Congress, he is then going to back up a little bit and say, look, I need you, Congress, to authorize this because as the president of the United States under the Constitution, by the way, you know, I had a little to do with the writing of it.
Presidents haven't been able to say for a while.
That's right.
I was there when it was written.
He felt he was unauthorized to have the Navy do more than just defend itself without a declaration from the legislative body. So, you know, on the one hand, yes, he sends the Navy out without authorization, but two, he's not going to let them get into offensive operations until the Congress acts. Well, as you might suspect, no declaration of war was voted upon, but Congress did give Jefferson authorization to take action. Does again, this not sound familiar. Right. We're not going to declare war in fill-in-the-blank country, but we will allow the president to have the ability to react to the Gulf of Tonkin or the Iraqis. You know, fill in the blank with your president of choice. So shortly thereafter, the USS Enterprise will end up battling with ships from the Tripolitan Navy, and off we go.
Well, I started this with the lyric, the shores of Tripoli. So what happened on the shores?
Well, the United States Navy was unchallenged, but the threat was not halted until U.S. troops were put ashore.
Ground troops.
Ground troops, something that the current day pundits and politicians are concerned will be a result of the use of our air power. You know, when you think about it, the 21st century equivalent of sending in the naval guns. Mm-hmm. Before finally committing to ground operations, though, we had to try sending in some things like a fire ship. I found this one interesting in looking up the Battle of Deem, which is where we're eventually headed. The USS Intrepid was a rechristened, captured Tripolitan ship. It had been loaded with explosives and pitch and tar and set afire by a skeleton crew and sailed into Tripoli's harbor, you know, sort of like a very slow motion under sail cruise missile.
I see.
The intention being to destroy the Tripolitan fleet in the harbor, but it failed to do so as the shore batteries opened up and blew it up before it got in and caused the damage. No matter how much you want to use force projection, and in the 1800s that'd be sending in the big ships of the line, in the 21st century sending in the cruise missiles, eventually you're going to end up on the ground. And an American naval agent, William Eaton, will command a combined force of American Marines and friendly mercenaries to eventually capture the port city of Deem. There were only 8 Marines, including one Lieutenant Presley O'Bannon, along with, depending on your source, somewhere between 100 to 500 Christian and Muslim mercenaries. After marching across land from Egypt, Eaton and the Americans will lead the group in an assault on the city on April 27, 1805, and take it. O'Bannon will raise the Stars and Stripes over the town, sort of a precursor of the Mount Suribachi moment for the Marine Corps. You can think of the Marine Corps monument
Iwo
Jima, right. The American force managed to hold the city against a counterattack on May the 13th and eventually will withdraw after a peace treaty is settled.
So the U.S. Navy and Marines capture the city of Deem, peace treaty settled, they sail back?
Well, not exactly. While favorable in terms, the U.S. paid $60,000 for the release of prisoners that had been taken when the USS Philadelphia ran aground earlier in the conflict. This led Eaton, when he was told to withdraw from Deem, to feel betrayed. The Barbary War is often the subject of debate over Jefferson's actions, with the rulers of the region eventually paying the ransom. Well, how is that any different than paying tribute? Wilson went to war to not pay tribute with the Barbary States. He will make the argument, in classic presidential sense, that it's different when it's ransom to gain release. I'm not paying tribute. The matter was not completely settled, though. Algerian ships, remember the Barbary States were more than one unit. Algerian ships will resume the attacks later, but the Americans were not able to respond because they were a little busy with the War of 1812. Mm-hmm. Once that's concluded at the Battle of New Orleans and other events in the peace treaty, then the United States will turn and respond with the Second Barbary War, and it will end any future payments when it concluded in 1816.
The Second Barbary War, that's something I didn't learn about in history class.
Well, you know, that's one of the interesting things of usually, as you say, history class, sort of typically taught as, well, you know, America has a scoreboard, and we had an 11-war season, generally, you know, toted up as 9-1-1.
Right.
We fought far more wars and conflicts than most, you know, a lot of military historians will use a number that actually reigns in the 250s.
Oh, my. So I guess it's like imagining a history student 150 years from now not knowing about Grenada.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
You know, is that a war? Well, right. You used your military, you took on a sovereign power.
And at the time, it was headlines.
Exactly.
But let's say Jefferson had gone to Congress and they said, absolutely not. We demand that you bring the Navy back. How physically could he have done that? I mean, if they're out to the water, Do you send a faster, smaller boat to tell them to turn around? Any idea of how you can reverse that action?
Oh, I think that's exactly what Jefferson had calculated, is that if I have these ships of the line, which were fairly swift vessels for the day, so far out to sea that, number one, they can't be caught by a smaller messaging ship, but also, number two, finding them. It's not like you were going to tell the small ship, here's the GPS coordinates and the satellite tracking of the USS Enterprise. You know, you're not going to beam the Enterprise back at this time. We're not quite to that technology level.
Right. But until we do get to that technology level,
we're history.